Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Federal Tort Claims Act and Individual Liability Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On March 22, 2016, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Simmons v. Himmelreich. This case arises from a lawsuit filed by federal prisoner Walter Himmelreich as the result of an assault by a fellow prisoner. Although several of Himmelreich's claims were dismissed in an initial round of litigation, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit allowed two to proceed on remand, of which one was a Bivens claim, made against certain officials in their individual capacities for failing to protect him in violation of the Eighth Amendment. The district court ultimately dismissed the claim, concluding that the judgment bar of the Federal Tort Claims Act precluded Himmelreich from pursuing a Bivens action against the officials individually when his underlying FTCA claim against the government had failed. On a subsequent appeal, the Sixth Circuit disagreed and again revived the Bivens claim, reasoning that the grounds on which the FTCA claim had failed, namely an exception to liability, indicated a lack of subject matter jurisdiction that did not trigger the FTCA judgment bar. The federal officials sought certiorari. The question before the Supreme Court is whether, in an FTCA action brought under Section 1346B, a final judgment dismissing the claim on the ground that relief is precluded by one of the FTCA exceptions to liability, 28 U.S.C. 2680, bars a subsequent action by the claimant against the federal employees whose acts gave rise to the FTCA claim. To discuss the case, we have Aaron Nielsen, who is Associate Professor of Law at Brigham Young University Law School. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Nielsen.
When I talk to law students, I try to tell them that most questions in court cases aren't, in fact, all that difficult. People see all the 5 to 4 cases at the Supreme Court and think of those cases are representative, but it isn't so. For instance, each week I track D.C. Circuit opinions, and far and away, most of those opinions are unanimous. There is a reason why so many cases are unanimous. The legal questions are not all that hard. Moreover, lots of potential cases are never filed in the first place because everyone knows what the answer would be. On the other hand, some cases are difficult, and a disproportionate number of those cases end up at the Supreme Court. To get to the Supreme Court, after all, lower courts have to disagree, and that doesn't happen very often. But when it does happen, it often means that there is something about the legal question that is atypical. Something has gone wrong. Simmons v. Himmelreich, argued yesterday at the Supreme Court, is just such a case. In particular, this is a case where both sides can legitimately claim to have text on their side. That's a problem. The text itself is a mess. Here's the story. Walter Himmelreich, respondent, is an inmate in federal prison. He is serving a sentence for producing child pornography. He alleges that another prisoner assaulted him. According to respondent petitioners, federal officials at that prison were on notice that the other inmate intended to attack him, but they still placed him in the general prison population where he was at risk of being attacked. Respondent sued the United States. The United States, of course, is generally immune from liability because of sovereign immunity. But sometimes the United States has waived its immunity. One of the most important waivers of sovereign immunity is the Federal Tort Claims Act, or FTCA. It provides in relevant part that the district courts of the United States shall have exclusive jurisdiction of civil actions on claims against the United States for money damages, for injury or loss of property, or personal injury or death caused by the negligent or wrongful act or omission of any employee of the government while acting within the scope of his employment, officer employment, if a private person in like circumstance would be subject to liability. Using this law, respondent sued the United States. A little bit later, however, respondent also sued the individual officers, petitioners, in their individual capacities under Bivens. A Bivens action is an implied right of action against federal officials who violate constitutional rights. So respondent has a claim against the United States and a claim against individual officers. The district court rejected respondent's claim against the United States as barred by the FTCA's discretionary function exception. which, broadly speaking, exempts discretionary acts from grounding liability against the United States. The district court did this soon after a suit was filed against individual officers. That dismissal under the discretionary function exception is the crux of this case. You see, another federal law, known as the judgment bar, provides that the judgment in an action under 1346B of this title, i.e. the FTCA, shall constitute a complete bar to any action by the claimant by reason of the same subject matter against the employee of the government whose act or omission gave rise to the claim. This is section 2676 of the statute. Based on this text, the United States argues that respondents' claim against the individual officers is also barred. After all, a dismissal under the discretionary function exception is a judgment, and respondent's suit concerns the same subject matter as the suit against the United States. So, argues the United States, the suit against the federal employees is subject to a, quote, complete bar, unquote. The Sixth Circuit didn't buy it. This led the United States to petition for cert. When the United States petitions for certiorari, its relative odds of success are very high. It thus is unsurprising that the Supreme Court took the case. The government asked for it, and they have a pretty compelling textual story. But now we come to why this case is difficult. The United States has a textual argument, but so does respondent. His textual argument, however, is based on another text altogether. Section 2680 of the law provides that the provisions of this chapter shall not apply over a dozen enumerated types of claims that are exempt from the FTCA, including, arguably, the judgment bar. Respondent argues that due to Section 2680, the judgment bar, quote, shall not apply, end quote, here. At this point, I wish I had a whiteboard to show the text of the two statutes. The United States points to the judgment bar's text, which, read most naturally, seems to capture respondent's claims against the individual officers. But respondent points to Section 2680, which also, read most naturally, suggests the judgment bar, quote, shall not apply, end quote. Finally, just to add to the complexity here, there's at least one more piece of the puzzle that bears mentioning. In 1999, in a case called United States v. Smith, the Supreme Court held that one provision within the same chapter as the discretionary function exception is not covered by Section 2680. With these background points in place, you can imagine the arguments. The United States argues that the plain text of the judgment bar applies and that Section 2680 is inapplicable because the exact same textual argument being offered by respondent here would also have applied to the provision in Smith, but the Supreme Court there rejected it. Respondent, by contrast, argues that the words shall not apply are perfectly clear and that Smith is not on point. A great deal of the briefing is dedicated to answering whether Smith is applicable here and whether it can be distinguished. Likewise, because the text points in different directions, both sides have to try to massage the text, which is not entirely satisfying. Needless to say, of course, both the United States and respondent have other arguments. For instance, they disagree about whether dismissal on jurisdictional grounds is a, quote, judgment, end quote, for purposes of the statute, or whether there must be a res judicata effect, and if there must be a res judicata effect, whether a dismissal under these circumstances counts. But what I just laid out strikes me as the main points of contention. Petitioner, the United States, points to the language of the judgment bar and Smith. Respondent points to the text of Statute 2680. At argument yesterday, the justices struggled with the text because the text seems to point in different directions. For instance, Justice Alito asked the lawyer for the government, quote, you would have a nice, clean textual argument if you are willing to argue that judgment means judgment. It means any judgment. But in your reply brief, you say that perhaps a technical or a procedural judgment is not a judgment under the judgment bar. So what does that mean? But Justice Alito also challenged the lawyer for respondent, because respondent's argument is not a, quote, purely literal reading, end quote, of the statute either. The Chief Justice made a similar point. Likewise, Justice Breyer observed, this is a very complicated, it's like Abbott and Costello. And Justice Kennedy observed that to get around Smith may be awkward. Justice Kagan, too, focused on the text of the statute and so asked hard questions of both sides. And Justice Ginsburg, who of course used to teach civil procedure, made interesting points regarding the modern res judicata law. This case is tricky because it really isn't pure textualism anymore, or at least not straightforward textualism. So what is the court to do? This is why some cases get to the Supreme Court. The answer isn't straightforward. Because there is not a clean textual argument, the court may end up addressing some complicated issues because those issues may provide some hints about what the text means. For instance, it is plausible to think that a decision that lacks res judicata effect is hardly a, quote, judgment, end quote, that bars anything under traditional principles of litigation. In other words, the word judgment might carry with it common law notions of what a judgment is, and that carries with it res judicata. This is especially true because some on the court may believe that the whole point of the judgment bar is to prevent a situation like the following. Someone sues the United States, loses on the merits because the United States did not do what it was alleged, and then that person turns around and sues an individual officer. In that scenario, no one thinks that the plaintiff could recover. Here, by contrast, the United States never prevailed on the facts. It is possible that the individual officers, on behalf of the United States, did violate respondents' rights. Faced with this fact pattern, the court may conclude that Congress did not intend to deprive respondent of any remedy at all. Justice Sotomayor seemed to hint at an argument like this at argument. And indeed, respondents' lawyers argue that the United States' position could lead to absurd consequences. What if a claim against the United States is dismissed for improper venue? Is that subject to the judgment bar? Even the United States is wary to make that argument head on. At the same time, however, the United States offers the court a straightforward way to rule in its favor. Just apply Smith for Section 2680 and then say that a dismissal under the discretionary function exception is a judgment and that respondent's suit concerns the same subject matter as the suit against the United States. If Smith is rightly decided, a question far, far beyond the scope of this podcast, then the position offered by the United States strikes me as quite attractive. So what's the court going to do? Honestly, I'm not sure, but I bet that the court's opinion will end up being fairly complicated. As I tell my students, most cases in the federal courts are actually pretty easy. This case, however, isn't one of them.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.